Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music from the pen of Nicola Porpora, who wrote arias for the great castrato Farinelli, recreated in a new album by our guest today, countertenor Philippe Jaruski. We just heard the aria, Placidetti Zeffiretti. Mr. Jaruski joined on this recording by mezzo-soprano Cecilia Bartoli and the Venice Baroque Orchestra conducted by Andrea Marcon. Welcome to Crossover, Philippe Jaruski.
Nice to hear you.
Nice to hear you and, oh, so much to talk about.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I must admit I'm still under the spell because I was listening, of course, to your album, as I should, before I speak with you. And I am absolutely carried away, blown away, I guess better, is the expression by the beauty of your voice and the, of course, the music. Magnificent, really wonderful
album.
And of course, you know what I'm talking about with the story of Farinelli and then your singing, of course, the songs, the arias that were written for him. But you are actually a violinist by trade originally, is that right?
Yes. Finally, I learned the music with the violin. And I started quite late. I was 11 years old.
Oh, okay.
And I have still a violin at home, but I don't play anymore.
Oh, well, you sing instead, I guess. Tell us, what is the situation? When do you discover that you can sing as a countertenor? Of course, in the old days, there was no problem. But nowadays, your range, of course, is that it's very, very high. And how does one develop that?
Yes, it's, this voice, yes, it's, how can I explain that? I remember that always remember that I had the pleasure to sing high. And this is most important thing, of course, to choose a voice, you need this pleasure, of course, to
yes.
sing in this range. But it's true that, for example, a lot of my colleagues, they are starting very early in boy choirs, for example.
Yes, as sopranos.
And after the mutation, they are sometimes becoming countertenors.
Yes.
But this is not my case. I really discovered this high register when I was 18 years old and going to a concert and hearing a French countertenor. And I was really shocked, we can say.
Mm-hmm.
And my life changed in one evening, we could say also. It's like a vocation.
Yes.
Really, I felt deeply that I had this inside me. And I really decided after this evening to find a teacher and to start. And that was something quite obvious for me. And when you are a countertenor, you know that. And I remember this story about David Daniels, the most famous American countertenor, who's really trained his chest voice a lot, many years. And once he said to his teacher, or her teacher, I don't remember, I don't understand. It's when I'm singing, it's much easier with the other voice. And the teacher asked, which, what, you are speaking about another voice. And he sang as a contratenor, and we know the career he did.
Mm.
Then his instinct really told him that he was a contratenor. And I think I knew that quite early.
Well, I just wonder, I mean, naturally your voice, they say the voice changes at a certain age, of course.
Yes.
And that is a physical change. It has absolutely nothing to do with what you're doing. So did the voice change and you found it more comfortable to sing in a different register? Or did the voice change at all? Did you have that, the puberty thing, you know?
Of course. I think you can hear that with my speaking voice,
yes, of course.
Hope.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
And it's true that it's, you know, we have, all of us, we have these two mechanisms. And this is head voice, chest voice. And the woman, the man, of course, culturally, we are much more used to hear a woman singing with the head voice. But this is finally quite cultural. We have the both mechanisms. And if you hear Nathalie Dessay or Joss Di Donato,
right,
they are not speaking like they are singing, fortunately.
They have a lower speaking voice, I guess.
Yes,
yeah.
This is the same. They are also speaking in the chest voice and not in the head voice. Then, of course, this head voice is something you need to be gifted first, but it's also something you have, of course, to train a lot. It's true.
Well, is it placement? Is that what it is?
Yes, and also I think what is difficult is to conserve something natural on it, particularly for a contratenor. I remember when I started to sing on stage in concerts, I was always asking to my friends or my family, does it sound natural? And because I was obsessed by the fact it could sound too much artificial.
Right.
And even with my teacher, I have the same teacher for 17 years now. Mm-hmm. And we always tried to connect this head voice with the speaking voice. We were also making some exercises with my baritone voice, you know, because it's true that, well, maybe this is something difficult to train and to conserve, is that this contratenor voice has to stay connected to
who you are,
sort of, yeah, who you are, and also we need to speak, we need to not only to sing, we have a contratenor is not someone who is just making charming sounds, you know, we need to express passion, we need to express,
of course,
drama, and this is a thing which is maybe something I had to train the most.
From the opera Semiramide, Regina della Siria, we heard Come Nave in Ria Tempesta, performed by countertenor Philippe Jaruski with the Venice Baroque Orchestra, conducted by Andrea Marcon. Is there a placement? I mean, when you speak, you open your mouth and you speak as a gentleman, a young man. And when you sing as a countertenor, the voice that you are using, does it automatically go into the upper register? Do you have to think about the production of the sound? Or do you just open your mouth and when you sing, it goes up there?
Yes, but I think this is the case for all the singers. I think after a while, after many years of training, it's true that the change between speaking and singing is a change of... it's like you are more alive, you know? Your level of energy is just higher, you know? And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Tequila Bartoli, and it's fascinating.
And your duets with in the album, it's just exquisite. But I was going to say to you that
was a big chance. But you know, I'm very fascinated when she's speaking and when she's singing. Uh-huh. The switch between the both is automatic, and for me, it's not so like this. But for her to speak and to sing is the same energy, it's the same. I'm quite impressed by that, because for her singing is really becoming so natural, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why when she's singing, you feel that she's speaking something to you. She's telling you a story, and it's still what I'm working on my voice, is trying to find this switch. Then finally, it's not demanding so much effort.
Have a switch,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, most of the time, they are saying that when I'm singing, it seems effortless.
Yes.
But maybe I'm looking like this, but it's no.
It does. It does. In the album, you know, when you're singing the duet, I mean, you're both in the same range. I mean, it's really amazing to hear this, and you cannot. Your voice does not sound, I must say, it doesn't sound like a man singing a countertenor. It just sounds like a contralto voice or something like that, if you know what I mean. It's
Yes. It's
a voice. It's not somebody singing in that voice. It's just the voice.
Yes,
alone. And it's also very stunning as a listener to hear this voice and then discover that it is you who is singing.
Ah, I can. Yes, maybe I'm too much used to hear countertenors, but I think, you know, I'm still fighting against the fact that to think about countertenors as wonders, you know, miracles.
Yes.
I think for me the most important thing is to do music with my voice and to express music and feelings. And of course, it's difficult to say that because in this Farinelli project, of course, it's very pyrotechnic, you know. It's a way also to show all the abilities of a voice to sing this castrato repertory.
Here now, countertenor Philippe Giurusky singing the aria Alto Giove from Polifemo by Porpora. Music of Nicola Porpora from his opera Polifemo. We just heard a performance of Alto Giove by our guest today, countertenor Philippe Giurusky. I'm just thinking, as you're speaking about it, should be a natural thing. Why then, in those early years, couldn't they have trained young men or men to sing without, you know, being castrati? I just wonder about that. If it is natural for the voice to be placed in certain registers.
Yes, but this is one of the most currently misunderstanding, that this is there is a huge difference between a contratenor and a castrato voice.
Okay.
And it's true that this is the paradox of the castration at this period. Then we know that a big part of the castrati, they had a very huge voice, very brilliant voice,
uh-huh.
a little bit more like a high tenor, you know. And of course, a contratenor voice is a little bit lighter. And this is all the difficulty to sing this repertory for these lost voices.
Mm.
And the way to train was different also, of course. They were training all the day. They were starting at the age of 7, 8, and when they were starting their career, finally started to be on stage at 15.
Wow.
And he was already a very accomplished singer, you can imagine.
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, I started to sing at the age of 18. And then, of course, I was already an adult. And this training was really something we lost forever. And the only thing we still have is the music written for them. Then you have these options, of course. You can engage a contratenor, or you can also engage a woman. Of course, Cecilia did a beautiful CD about the castrati also.
But the duets you have on this Farinelli disc they're just gorgeous. I mean, the whole thing is so breathtaking. I must say,
yeah.
I'm terribly
but
moved.
But the miracle of a castrato, and something is difficult to understand now, is that of course they probably had all the qualities in the same voice. They were powerful. They could sound like a male, like a female, and like a child. Mm-hmm. They had all the voices in the same body, probably. And I think it's something it's difficult to imagine now.
Music of Niccolò Porpora, we heard from his opera Mitridate, the aria La Gioia Ch'io Sento, performed here by mezzo-soprano Cecilia Bartoli, and our guest today, countertenor Philippe Jaruski, joined by the Venice Baroque Orchestra, conducted by Andrea Marcon. Well, I just wonder why this wasn't just considered a natural progression instead of making this a very special kind of voice. If we all have all of these voices, male or female, why, if you trained a certain way, couldn't you develop it without being a castrati? That's I think, what I was wondering about in those years.
Yes, but, you know, of course, to do this operation on children, the vocal cords, for example, they were very, very short, very small, you know. And then, of course, physically, they have very short vocal cords and a huge breast. And then, of course, they have very supernatural gifts.
Mm.
to sing, you know. And of course, we don't have to regret this time, because you can imagine that was also such a big tragedy. In the 18th century, there were thousands and thousands of children. They were making this sacrifice in the name of music.
Yes, yes.
And this is also something we cannot regret, of course.
Well, in retrospect, I guess. But and now you're a violinist. I mean, you were, you know, a musician. Did you kind of just discover this, or did it become something that was terribly important to you? I mean, you did already. You had graduated from the conservatory as a violinist.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was very lucky, because my parents, they were not musicians, and that was at school. That when I was 10, that a teacher in my school said to my parents, "I think that Philip is gifted for music. He should start to learn an instrument." Uh-huh. And I was never thinking about that, my parents either. And then finally, I was very lucky, because this is the school, the general school in France, who really discovered for what I was the most gifted in life, and I could do something else without that. And of course, when I started to study music, and really was such a big discovery for me. And the only thing for me is that you said I'm a musician, and it's funny story, because when I'm working with a lot of different orchestras, and some of them sometimes they are coming and saying, "Oh, you're a musician like us, because you did an instrument. You're not only a singer."
Well, I used to, yeah. Well, you know, I'm also a musician, and I remember we used to say, "Well, it's a singer, you know, not a musician." I mean, you know, it was always that musicians always kind of look down on non-musicians. Let's put it that way.
Yes, but you know, this is a way also to say that to make your voice sounding the best as possible. This is not the goal of a voice, of course. It's not the goal. You have to dominate some technical points, of course, when you are an opera singer. But I remember when I was young, I had quite a small voice, and I was always obsessed. Does it sound enough in the hall? We have to sound without microphones all the time. And each hall has a different acoustic, for example. Then it's quite stressful when you are a young singer. And then finally, after maybe now 15 years already on stage, I feel myself a little bit more relaxed with all these things, because I think if you are expressing an emotion, feeling, finally the voice will ever sound enough, you know, will touch people. It's not a question of only volume of the voice.
Where did you learn how to speak English?
I don't know. I was very bad at school.
Yeah,
no,
very,
I was
very
bad at school.
Very
but
good.
This
Excellent.
Is also the chance to become an opera singer. It's true that you have to learn Italian, you speak German, you have to learn a lot of different languages. And I know that also a lot of American singers, and they are speaking French, Italian,
yes, but
Spanish.
You speak very good English for a Frenchman, because
do you
very,
think so? Yeah,
yeah.
But I told you, it's because of my job, because I was terrible at school.
Well, you're not terrible now. You have a glorious, glorious voice. This is a breathtaking album. I just can't tell you how. I was surprised, because you know you have preconceived ideas about things, especially with the story of Farinelli.
Thank you.
music of Nicola Porpora from his opera Orfeo, we heard the aria Sente del mio martir, performed by our guest today, Philippe Jaruski, countertenor. Will you be appearing in the United States? What is your travel plan?
Yes,
look like?
I'm making a tour, and now for the entire February, I will be touring with the orchestra of the city, the marvelous Venice Baroque Orchestra.
Ah, yes.
And I'm very happy because finally I just realized that it was almost 3 years I didn't come back to United States.
Uh-huh.
And it's
how long
a long time,
have you,
3 years.
How long did you spend in the United States? You learned English abroad, is that right?
No, it was always for a short time, just 3 weeks or not more. But it's true that for me now also, this is fantastic because the classical music is international, you know.
Yes.
Everywhere we are listening, Vivaldi, Purcell, Bach, Handel,
right.
Beethoven.
Right.
And then for me also, of course, my main activity is in Europe. But, you know, all the audiences are very different. And it's true that for me, it's also very interesting to meet different audiences and to meet new people. And this is also this type of opportunity I can get in America.
And people are very interested now in early music. There was a period there where even with just instrumentalists, it was kind of a fad. But this is part of the repertoire now. I mean, you know, people are always searching. You have an ensemble as well that you have put together.
Yes, because you know I as you said, I'm a musician, and I hope to be a musician after. Not to be anymore a singer.
Well, that's not going to be for a while, I don't think.
I hope, but you know, I'm not. I don't see myself singing very late. You know, a voice has always a golden age, and this is also a part of the attraction of the audience about voices. You know, because if you like a voice, you know that you have 20-30 years to enjoy it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it's true that I don't know if after 45 I will really still have the same energy, because you know, also it's a job, it's a fantastic job, but it's also sometimes very stressful, you know.
And limiting.
Because you have always to take care about your voice.
Yeah.
You have to make sacrifices when you're a singer. And this is true. When you are young, you don't realize so much. But finally, after 10 years, you realize that you have really to sacrifice things for the voice.
Spoken like a true instrumentalist. You always have the violin, but right now the public are so very, very lucky to have your glorious voice and this beautiful album that you have just released. Do you have anything else that you're working on for the next release?
For the next release? Yeah. You mean
another album after this?
Oh yes, I also recorded the Stabat Mater by Pergolesi, who is already released also in Europe. I don't know here, but probably. And I have also some crazy project. It's a Purcell music with in a sort of jazz version with and this is quite. Fun also, and operas, a lot of. I'm a very lucky guy for CDs, you know. I'm working with the same company for more than 10 years, and I can record what I want, and I'm very, very lucky with that. And
well, there's a reason for that, of course, because you're good at what you do and you're successful.
And probably also because I have also a curiosity for unknown repertory. But now I want to dedicate more the next 5 years to pieces, more famous pieces, finally, because you are always afraid to record something with a lot of versions on CD, and it's always frightening, you know.
So,
but now I feel that I have enough maturity to approach very famous arias and music.
Well, you're more confident, but probably, and you have more confidence in yourself, but there's no need for you to worry.
Well, thank you. And sometimes you don't have to wait too much because it could be too late.
Well, you're an all-round musician with a glorious voice, and this is a marvelous album. And I hope that you will. Do you ever come on your tours? Would you think you'd be coming through Philadelphia?
No, unfortunately not. No,
just New York, right?
No, not New York. There are a lot of cities. There is Chicago, there is San Francisco, Kansas City. There is a lot, but there is so much cities in America.
Well, you're naming a lot of the good ones. So we're very lucky to be able to hear you at least on this glorious recording. And I wish you the very best. I hope to hear more about you. And we'll see if you're still singing. Maybe you're going to do something else that's really quite fantastic as well.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for your enthusiasm.
Yes, and a pleasure speaking with you.
It was a pleasure too. Thank you.
Thank you. Au revoir.
Bye-bye.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.